Good to see everybody. I was thinking, I've kind of had the past couple weeks talking about the church. I kind of had a few things from the past. I had the typewriter that was my old typewriter that I had. And then I was thinking about the computer with the, the modem sounds and all that, the old from the 90s kind of computer. Well, I was thinking another thing. I used to, when I got out of high school, I went to college, believe it or not, and I started playing tennis. And I was never really very good, but I had fun. And so, you know, I was thinking about tennis. And I was trying to think about, because I've kind of been the thing of how things become more modern and change. And tennis balls really haven't changed a whole lot. They're pretty much the same as they were in 1973 or 74, whenever I was playing. But the one thing that has changed are the rackets. This would have been, I remember seeing this very racket. I don't know this exact, let's put it this way. This same model racket was pretty popular when I played. And it was a pretty great racket. Now, you won't see anyone playing with this. You could kind of tell it's an older racket because of the cover, if you notice there's some stains on it. But the but these were the rackets. Now, you know, they have the rackets, the big heads. They're way, just way better, made out of something. I don't even know idea what they had aluminum for a while. Then they had some kind of carbon fibers. I think that's what they are. I'm not really even sure what they're making them out of nowadays. But they have changed. And you can hit the ball better and everything. So part of this whole process is talking about the church and like how, well, things sometimes we kind of have to like, oh, well, how can we make this better? And that doesn't mean we change. If tennis is still tennis, you still hit the ball back to the other guy and he hits it back to you. And, you know, you cover the baseline, you move in for your drop shot or whatever you're going to do. But tennis is still tennis, but the equipment's changed a bit. And church is still church. God's still God. We still love people. We still reach people. But we start asking ourselves, well, how can we do this better? What can we do? So the different aspects of the church that we're talking about are not anything new. They're the same things that the church has always been doing. And our question is, how can we do them better? How can we adapt what's the eternal truth and make it work better in our with who we are, where we are, the time in which we live? So anyhow, so that's kind of why we're going back to our Y church. There we go. Y church. And then we have our five basic things. I think we're on week three of this. So, you know, we'll get to some other text later. But here, let's go through our three things. Worship is one of our elements. Fellowship, ministry, evangelism, and discipleship. And today we're going to talk about, oh, wow, look at that spinner. And always, wow, it seems like I just have a sermon prepared for this every time. And it's discipleship is one of the key elements of the church. And discipleship has to do with us growing and us helping others. We're going to talk more about this. But as I said last week, these things really tend to overlap. Because fellowship is, we have fellowship with God. We have fellowship with each other. We love each other. We care for each other. We encourage and bless each other. And then we also have evangelism. That's what we talked about last week. We reach out. We try to make the situation better. We tell people the good news of Jesus. Because the reality is that without Jesus, it's really bad news. It's really not good. And it's important for us to reach out and help people and take them the gospel, the good news that we can be saved and have eternal life in heaven by knowing Jesus Christ. But then we know Christ, and then we end up with this whole element called discipleship. And it overlaps evangelism, it overlaps fellowship. Often, discipleship turns into fellowship. As we, oh, I'm going to help this person, but actually pretty soon we're helping each other. I was thinking of a couple elements about this. How that we start, sometimes we feel like we've learned how to do something and it, you know, in the context of Christianity, well, God's shown me these things, and I want to share them with somebody else. So we start meeting with somebody. We start talking to them. We start develop some kind of a relationship where we are helping them, and we're growing together. And that's really cool. But then the thing we learn is that through that process, you learn more than you're trying to share. And the person who's learning. Yeah, they'll learn some things, but then all of a sudden you're learning things from them. Then they're taking these things and they're sharing them with somebody else. And it's just the way it works. And so it's a crucial element in the church is discipleship. So start off with, what is a disciple? A disciple, because you can't have discipleship without a disciple. So a disciple is a student. A disciple is a follower, a learner, a student. Now, often we think of this whole concept of student, learner, follower. Part of the reason it's not 100% clear, because it's not exactly a student. A student, we think of, okay, go to school, the teacher is presenting, a subject, and then I want to learn that subject so I can pass the test. One of the things that discouraged me about being a Spanish teacher was the best students would come in and go, hey, what do I have to do to pass this class? And not many people really wanted to learn Spanish because it was a required class. And then on top of that, when I was teaching high school Spanish, the students kind of had that approach of, what do I have to do to pass? And the best students, what do I have to do to get an A? Okay, I give them a list, they do it, that's it. They still can't speak Spanish or can't really even make, they've learned a few little things. And then the other thing was that the parents kind of were the same thing. They were like, well, what does my kid have to do to pass this class? And they weren't really too interested in learning Spanish. Occasionally, out of 150 students a year, you might have one or two that were really interested in learning Spanish, but you had a lot of, and those were the best students. And a lot of students were like, what are you going to get through here? And what do I have to do just to avoid you? Those were other issues. But that's just like general school teacher stuff. But but I do think that the whole process of what does it mean to be a student? Because this is more like a follower. It's not just a student. It's what does it mean to be like him? So somebody put it this way. They said, a learner or learn what we kind of think of as a student is you want to learn what the teacher knows. So the teacher knows this stuff. He's transmitting this information to you or she or whoever. And then they're transmitting this information to you. And boom, you pass the test. You're on to your next class. And that's good. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But that's not what this is. This is more like what their idea of a disciple is I want to be like the teacher is. Not just know what he knows, I want to be like he is. And so this has to do with changing who I am on the inside. And I learn about other people. I learn from someone, but I end up being like them. And Jesus, when they asked him what a disciple, he talked about this and he said, what's a disciple? Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him, if you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And Jesus was saying, look, if you want to be my disciple, you want to be my follower, you want to be my learner, you want to be my student, you know what? You abide in my word, or as it says in, if you hold to my teachings, that's what it says in NIV, which I think is good. It's kind of a little bit more clear. If you hold to my teachings, you are really my disciples. And then the truth will set you free. And part of this whole thing of discipleship is it turns us into, well, Lord, I believe, I want what you have. And I really believe that's a key element of this. It's like Jesus, when he told the disciples, when he gave them the Great Commission, he said to go into all the world and make disciples of all nations. And then he said to baptize them and teach them. And sometimes we kind of put the whole... But the idea is you're going to go and you're going to go make disciples. That's what it is. Because it's not just about, oh, we're here for fellowship and we have a club and we all get together and we all like each other. Oh, that's cool. I like that. That's not bad. It's like, hey, we're going to go tell people about Jesus. They're going to pray some prayer, accept Christ, and boom, we'll see you in heaven, brother. No, that's not how it works either. Like there's nothing wrong with any of those steps, but they all come together. And as we share Christ, and as someone accepts Christ, or as you become part of the fellowship, then what you do is you get to know people, you share their lives, and you grow. And you grow, and you become a disciple. And one of the things is you figure out, well, Jesus, what do you want? Oh, well, he talked about it in this word, or this book we call the Bible. I like an example is where Paul, he kind of puts it in a little different way, but I think it expresses the word disciple isn't in the next verse, let's just put it that way. But I think he expresses the desire or the feeling of what it takes to be a disciple or what it means to be a disciple. What's a disciple? Paul speaking in Philippians 3, and he says, that I may know him, Jesus, and the power of his resurrection, and may share his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, that by any means possible, I may attain the resurrection from the dead. And so he's saying, look, what Paul's goal, there's right in this same context, he says, this one thing I do, reaching for what's ahead. He says, I'm striving, I'm reaching, I'm trying, and really the goal is I want to know Jesus. I want to be like him. I want to share in the power of his resurrection. I may share in the fellowship of his suffering. But I want to be like him, that by any means possible, I may attain the resurrection of the dead. So the whole concept of discipling or discipleship or being a disciple is about, I want to be like Jesus. Now, one issue, there's a couple things here. One, you have the Bible. That's good. Read the Bible. Get in the Word. We have a Bible reading schedule. It's posted. It's usually on the back of the bulletin, and it's also on our website. That's cool. If you just read your Bible, look at the Bible, study it, say, look, what is Jesus saying? And what do I want to do? But really, one of the biggest ways Jesus works in our lives is he uses us as we interact in each other's lives. This is why church. Because we grow together. And we grow, and I mean we grow together in a couple different ways. We grow, as we grow, hopefully we're all growing, so we're growing together in that sense. And we also, as we grow and get to know each other and pray for each other and bless each other and encourage each other, we grow together in a sense that we love each other more, we care more about each other, and this is part of what growing is. And so Paul, he also gave another suggestion, probably isn't the right word, command, I think is a little strong. Maybe it'd be better to use the word invitation. An invitation. And he said, be imitators of me as I am of Christ. And I think here's what discipleship is about so much in our lives. It's that we help someone, and as the things I've learned, I pass on to somebody else. And hopefully, if I'm walking with Christ, then you'll learn to walk with Christ too. There's a couple quotes I have here. Somebody said, how does discipleship happen? The level of our obedience is most often determined by the behavior standards of other Christians around us. In other words, it's like, you know what? People around us influence us. And what we see as the norm, how we see what we think is important, we end up sharing that with others. We end up living that with others. We end up being that. And, you know, Jesus said, he who is faithful in a little will be faithful in much. But I do think that this whole concept of, like Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. Follow me as I follow Christ is, you know what? Each one of us, we're like, wow, I want to set my sail. I want to head this way. I want to follow Christ. I want to follow this person because they're following Christ. And so what's going to happen in your life, kind of on a practical level, is we start looking around and we see people who are living for Jesus. And we decide, do I want to be like that or not? The no one you're looking at is going to, if you're like, well, this is more of a guideline. Because if you start pushing this too far, well, so-and-so, I thought they were this, and they turned out they had a flaw. Oh, no. Hey, you know, right now, I can tell you, no matter who you're talking about, no matter who you're looking at, no matter who you're looking to, they have a flaw. In fact, they have multiple flaws. I like using blemish, because then we could say they have multiple blemi. So, you know, but they have them, okay? That's just the way it is. But yet we can kind of see the influence, the discipleship, the what people think is important. I used to go to these, when I was traveling around as a missionary, I went to three, there were three schools of churches that I went to mostly. One school, their big thing was about, they just were really wanted to be faithful. They were faithful. That was like, if you were taking the key word for them, I would say faithful. So then like I would talk to the, and you know what? I totally believe it's good to be faithful. So when I would talk to them, hey, you know what? When I go be a missionary, I'm going to be faithful. I am going to be faithful. And I'm going to be faithful to the word. I'm going to be faithful to Christ. I'm going to be faithful. That's what I'm going to try to do. That's what my goal is. Okay. Then I went to another group of churches, and they kind of came, you know, you can kind of see the stream, and the headwaters here would be the school, and then the stream of the churches, right? And the other one, they were really, I was with an independent Baptist group, and so they were really felt important that these, that they were Baptist. Hey, you know what? I was Baptist. And you know what? The churches I was going to start were going to be Baptist churches. Hopefully they're going to be faithful Baptist churches, because I was this. But if I was talking to these guys, you know what I'm going to be doing over there in Spain? I'm going to be starting a Baptist church. And I would kind of emphasize that a little bit, because that was really, really important to them. Whereas the first group, not so much. And then the other third group was, they were really big on evangelism. Like, evangelism is what it's about. Witnessing, sharing to God. Hey, you know when I talked to them? I wanted to be faithful, having a Baptist church and preaching the gospel and hoping people get saved, right? So, but yet you could tell like a little stream of where they came from. This occurs in everything. I was looking at, I was thinking about, it is the fall and it is Sunday, so there is football. And I was thinking when, I remember moving to the Bay Area in the early 80s. And the 49ers had this new coach named Bill Walsh. And yeah, there you go. And Graylin knows who he is, so there you go. And so I had always liked the Rams, because where I grew up, that you only got L.A. channels. So I always watched the Rams, and I liked the Rams. But then I moved up there, and then one year I was a Raider fan, and they won the Super Bowl. Then the next year I became a 49er fan, and they won the Super Bowl. So I just figured, so then that influenced my career as a football fan. Like, hey, why not like the team that's going to win the Super Bowl? And so that's kind of what I've turned into. So, and I'm proud of it. So I'm as loyal to the teams as they are to the players, and the players are to them. So I figure that's how it is. Anyhow, but one of the things that's interesting, they have what they call the coaching tree, I believe it was called. So Bill Walsh was the coach of the 49ers. And then the first line are people who were his assistant coaches who later became head coaches. And then from there, coaches from their assistant coaches who became other head coaches, and then their assistant coaches who became other head coaches, etc. So it's kind of interesting, because if you look at these names, if you know anything about football, a lot of these guys have been around quite a bit. He has all kinds of people who were coaches all over the place, but you can kind of trace them back and a lot of them use a similar style of football. They do the short passes. They kind of substitute passes for runs. And they change it. Everybody's a little bit different. But you can kind of see versus other styles where, hey, look, it's about defense and running. And we don't worry about passing too much. And the more and more this has kind of taken over a lot of football. But if you go back and look at who were his influences, oh, Sid Gillman. He was the Chargers guy. And, oh, another one was another guy who was a coach with him, and he coached under at one point, was, as soon as I said that, Al Davis, who had been coach of the Raiders. So they both did this, like you can see the trail of styles that follow through. And I think in our lives, it's like that. So then my question is, like, how do we become disciples? Or how do we share what we believe, and how do we know? And I think there's this passage I love this passage in Deuteronomy. It's probably the most, verse 4 is the most read verse in the Old Testament. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words that I commanded you today shall be on your heart. And I think it starts with taking the word and having it be in your heart. And if it doesn't really reach into your heart, it's not going to pass on to anybody else. He goes on and says, you shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and of your gates. In other words, you're going to put these things in your heart, and then you know what? They're going to come out. You're going to tell them to your children, and you should talk of them while you sit in your house, while you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. That's pretty much all day. And he says, and then you bind them as a sign on your hand. And a lot of the Jews carried around these little boxes with things. And they're phylacteries is what they call them. But they carry these, which are scriptures, they carried around with them. It's kind of like carrying around your little cards. Or having on your phone app, be kind of looking at the Bible a lot. And, oh, wow, look at this. And kind of going back to the base of what is it that I really believe? What is it that I should believe? I don't know if you've ever noticed, but the Bible is a rather large document. And it's not like you read it through once and then now, dude, I know the whole thing. You probably forgot some. And it's also deep enough the way it's written that if you read it over again, you're going to get something new pretty much every time you read through. So what he's saying is, look, you're going to teach these. Now, this is probably the place where discipleship needs to start, which is called the home, because you're right there. But I think there's a principle that we take another level. And that is that if the reason you're talking about something here, when you sit down, when you rise up, when you walk, by the way, when you lie down, that whole thing, all the different places, is because this is something that's like inside of you that you're really excited about. I had a friend that he loved trout fishing. He loved trout fishing. And he, and if you talk to him for over like 30 seconds, the conversation would turn to trout fishing. And he when I first met him, he believed in using spoons, which are, you know, that's a type of a lure, this little shiny one with a little hook on it. And he could catch a lot of trout. And if you ever went fishing with him, he would tell me, well, John, I burned out another one. Yeah, because he kind of overdid it a little bit. I mean, you know, he was a great guy. And if you needed trout, he's the guy you want to talk to and talk with. But he did, his idea of a, you know, nice trout fishing day was, leave the house at 4 o'clock in the morning and then fish in the summer until it's dark. And where we lived, it would get dark about 9:30, 10 o'clock. So you would start at 4 in the morning and go till 10 o'clock at night and then go someplace and eat dinner and talk for 2 hours about the fishing trip that day. So you get home about 1 a.m. And it's like, and he was like enthusiastic. One thing that happened is then, and he would argue, we had this other friend that he was also, the two of them were the only two I knew that could actually go fishing multiple times together, because the other guy, that's how he thought a fishing trip should go too, 4 a.m. till 1 a.m. And so, but he believed in flies, not spoons, because the spoons kind of sink and you pull them, and the flies, he's like, no, the flies, that is the beauty of trout fishing. And you whip that thing around and you know, and then the other guys, no, but the spoons, that's this. And they could argue forever about the subtleties of spoon fishing versus fly fishing. And in fact, the guy, I don't need to, I've already diverted too much. This can go on. But what, or you know what happens is, if you talk to somebody that's really into football. Oh, you know what? Pretty soon, you know what you're talking about? Football. You talk to somebody, they love baseball. Pretty soon, you're talking about baseball. Talk about whatever. Oh, cars. Ooh, did you see that car? I guess I did. I didn't even notice it. Did it have four wheels? Yeah, oh, I saw it. I didn't let it hit me, did I? That's about as much as I'm concerned about cars. You know what I'm saying? But so, well, what about cars? What about, look, because whatever your passion is, pretty soon you're talking about it. So if your passion is the Lord, it's going to come out of you because that's what's inside you. It's when Jesus talked about this and he said, look, they asked him, it was kind of the opposite, but it was still the same idea. He says, look, they were talking about, well, do you have to wash your hands this way or that way? And he goes, look, it's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. It's what comes out that defiles you, because what comes out of you comes from your heart. So it's the same thing. And that's why the words here, let me go back one line here. That's why he says, here, the Lord our God is one God. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. See, this is about your heart. And what is your heart focused on? Well, then you want to share that. So, like I say, you want to share the passion. Look what God showed me. Look at this. And you start sharing it. Now, one of the things that also is true is that sometimes we learn something, but we're good at that thing. But that doesn't mean we're good at showing somebody else how we learned it or how to learn it. One of my favorite basketball coaches, like one of my guys that I really like and read books about him and stuff, is John Wooden. John Wooden, he was a Hall of Fame basketball player, and then he was the first person to be a Hall of Fame basketball player and a Hall of Fame basketball coach. But when I read his book, he said when he graduated from college in the 30s, he wanted to get married. He wanted to be a teacher, but he ended up working at a high school coach because couldn't go to the school to be a college teacher because he wanted to get married. So he got married. He becomes a high school teacher, high school coach. So he said although he had been an All-American and he had played really well, and then he started playing professional basketball on the side. This was the 30s, not the currently. And so he started doing that. But he said, even though he played at a very high level, he was a very poor coach. And it took him a long time because he said that was like a whole different thing. Like, how do you play? How do you do it? How do you play basketball is different than how do you teach someone else to play basketball. And part of this is where I think that sometimes discipleship is really such a growing experience for everybody involved. You have passion for Christ, that's great. And how you got it, that's, you got in the Word and God worked in your spirit and He changed you and you're excited and that's fantastic. But then discipling or discipleship or passing that on to somebody else, that's a different skill. So if you are in a relationship where you're with somebody who, you know, they're kind of interested, would like to grow, and you would like to help them, well, okay, share the things you've learned. That's cool. How do you do that? See, that's a whole nother growth area for you. So this is why when you have a mentoring/discipleship relationship, everybody involved grows. Everybody. Because we grow from learning from each other. We grow from learning how to share with each other. And then we grow through that whole thing. Look, the example element is huge. Paul said to Timothy, let no one despise you for your youth, but set the believers an example in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, in purity. And sometimes, you know, you look at Timothy was a younger man. And I think sometimes when you're younger, you think, well, you know, I can't really do this because I'm younger. No, that doesn't mean that. I saw a good quote that I'm going to add here, and it was this. Maturity does not come with age. It comes with acceptance of responsibility. And I think there's a lot of truth there. Like, age is an element. But really, I've seen some people who are pretty much my age, and I'm 61, who are kind of immature. Why? Because they don't want to accept responsibility. And the thing that makes you mature is accepting responsibility. And I've known people who were teenagers who've accepted major responsibilities, and all of a sudden they're an adult. And so part of the thing that's going to help you grow as a Christian, number one, you set an example. Because why? Because you see that I'm taking responsibility for my actions, first of all, for my relationship with Christ. And then I want to see, well, God, what else can I do to help? Once you start asking those questions, those are definitely steps toward maturity. I'm saying, look, how can I do what you want me to do, Lord? I want to be responsible before you. And I think that's the example of Timothy. He's there. Well, nobody could. Look, you just stay, keep doing the right thing. And all of a sudden, people are looking to you. I was thinking of a couple examples, and I'll share one. You know, you could look at, before I get to this, I guess I'll mention a couple others. You could look at Paul. Paul is kind of an interesting case, but I feel like I've talked about Paul quite a bit, so I'm going to talk about somebody else. But Paul is still an interesting case, and I just want to mention it on the way by. Paul, it says he studied at the feet of Gamaliel, who was a rabbi in Jerusalem, and Paul learned from him. Then Paul also, when he first became a Christian, he went to the apostles and talked to them. But then he went and studied himself. Then eventually Barnabas brought him in. And he went with Barnabas on the first missionary trip they were on. Barnabas seemed to be the leader. Paul was the disciple. Later on the second trip, they split up. Paul takes Silas. Now, the second missionary trip, Paul's definitely the leader. Silas is the disciple that's following. And later they meet Timothy, who we just mentioned. And Timothy is obviously a disciple, and he's following these things. And Paul, there's a bunch of different people mentioned that Paul led to the Lord, that he helped them, and then he commends them out to service. The ones I was looking at here are in the Old Testament. There's a guy named Elijah. Elijah did a bunch of pretty amazing miracles. He had this showdown with, he said it's not going to rain. It didn't rain. He was met with King Ahab and his prophets of Baal, and he called down fire from heaven, and then they killed all the prophets, and then he went, and the drought ended, and Queen Jezebel was going to kill him, and he got all depressed. And then God spoke to him, and he got up, and then he went shortly after that and called a helper whose name was Elisha. Sometimes we're a little confused about these two guys because one's name is Elijah and the other is Elisha. So anyhow, but Elisha, let's just read what happened here. So he departed, Elijah departed from there and found Elisha, the son of Shaphat, who was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen in front of him. He was with the 12. Elisha passed by him and cast his cloak upon him. It was kind of like, hey, here's my coat. It's like, it's an invitation, kind of like when Jesus told the disciples, follow me. And that's an invitation, come, follow me, come and serve me, come and be my disciple. And he ran, and he left the oxen and ran after Elijah and said, let me kiss my father and my mother, then I will follow you. And he said to him, go back again, for what have I done to you? And, what? He said, look, let me go back and, you know, say goodbye to my mom and dad, and then I'll follow you. And the idea here is, when they had greetings or kissed your father and mother, this wasn't just like, kiss your dad, kiss your mom, and let's get out of here. If you look at examples in the Old Testament where, like, when Jacob and Rebekah are trying to get out of town, and the father-in-law is like, hey, no, stay. Oh, we have to have a meal. Oh, this, another day. Oh, we have to have this. And really, you can't really get away. So when he's saying, I'm going to go back to my mother and father, and then I'll follow you, it's like, yeah, kind of like when my father and father die, and I'm not really following you right now. And then that's why he says, well, go back again, for what have I done to you? It's like, okay, go. So, and he returned from following him. And then he went back. He returned from following him, took the yoke of oxen and sacrificed them and boiled their flesh with the yokes of the oxen and gave it to the people. And they ate. Then he arose and went after Elijah and assisted him. So he did go back. He did make a... And this is about as much of a break as he could possibly make. Because what he did was, his farm tools were these oxen and the yokes and the plows and all this. So he says, look, here's what we're going to do. I'm following Elijah and I'm leaving this. Yeah, but don't you think you should leave like the door open to come back? No. Well, he says, look, I'll show you how I'm not leaving the door open. See the oxen? Let's kill them. See the plows and the tools? Will you build a fire with that? And then we're going to cook the oxen. You guys eat it, and then I'm out of here. I'm not coming back. I'm following Elijah. And that was in 1 Kings 19. Then some time passed. Approximately, I was trying to figure it out, and I saw different estimates by different people. Somewhere between probably 6 to 12 years passed. And Elisha is serving Elijah. And he's walking with him and living with him. He's there, and Elijah does some more miracles and things that they're doing together. And Elisha is there with him learning. And definitely in the role of Elijah is the master, and Elijah is the master. Elisha is the disciple. Then at the beginning of 2 Kings in chapter 2, it says, when they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, ask what I shall do for you before I am taken from you. It would have been nice if they would have just named one like Elijah and the other Bob. Then I wouldn't get them confused, okay? But Elijah and Elisha. And then Elisha said, please let there be a double portion of your spirit on me. And he said, you have asked a hard thing. Yet if you see me as I'm being taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if you do not see me, it shall not be so. And so he says, look, what I want is a double portion. Like what you have, I want it. And not only want what you have, I want double what you have. And Elijah goes, well, you know, you've asked a hard thing, but if you see me going up to heaven, if you see me be taken away, you'll get it. And then I think it's interesting. And as they went on and talked, behold, chariots of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. And Elisha saw it, and he cried, my father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen. And he saw him no more. But it's interesting. He said, look, if you see me go up, and a lot of times you hear people say, I've heard this said mistakenly many times, Elijah went to heaven in a chariots of fire. No, that's not what happened. Look at it. It says, and they went and talked. Behold, chariots of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. And kind of, I've always thought this, like, to put this, the two verses back together. Let me go back to the other one here real quick. If you go here, try here, here we go. He says, you've asked a hard thing, verse 10, you've asked a hard thing, yet if you see me as I am being taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if you do not see me, it shall not be so. So I kind of view this picture as, here's Elijah and Elisha, they're being separated. Elijah, there's like a big distraction. These chariots, horses and chariots of fire come through. And then there's this whirlwind that takes up Elijah. Well, in the process, it's like, wow, look at these chariots. To me, that would be like, can you stay focused on what's really important here? I mean, it's kind of like imagine this picture. Elisha is a hunting dog. A squirrel runs by. Does he follow this or does he stay focused on what he's really supposed to be? He says, look, Elijah says, look, if you want this double portion, you stay focused on what you want. And now this big distraction comes by. No, this is where I am. This is where I'm focused. I saw it. That's what he says. My father, the chariots of Israel's horsemen. He said, and Elijah went up and Elisha saw it and he cried. Okay, and he saw it. He saw the whole thing. And it's interesting, some people have pointed out that they went through and counted up miracles. I don't know, because some of these things, it's hard. Do you count this as one thing or two things? And, you know, but it's clear that Elisha, the second one, did a lot more miracles than Elijah, the first one. And in fact, some people calculate that he did twice as many, or at least as recorded, which could be the way it's recorded. I sometimes those count things, I have a little bit of, why are you splitting this one into two, or why are you grouping this one, these two as one, and whatever. But he did more. He definitely did more. He said, I want to be who you are, only I want twice that. And God granted it to him. Look, let's kind of finish out here. Discipleship, it connects to fellowship. And then as we grow and we share and we grow from each other and with each other, then what happens is we start, all of a sudden, discipleship turns into fellowship. I think this is really easy to see with your kids. Like my children, since I have all grown children, all of a sudden it's like, yeah, they still ask me a question once in a while. They usually tell me more stuff than they ask me at this point in their lives. And I learn a lot from them. But see, that's why it changes from just, like when they were 2 years old, it was like me going, no, you do this, you do that. I'll ask the questions, I'll give the answers, and you do what you're kind of told. But now, it's like, no, we discuss things. And I learn a lot from them. They're all adults in their own right. They have insights on their own right. I learn from them. They still look to me in a lot of ways, but I learn from them and I look to them too. That's why, because discipleship becomes fellowship. And then as we reach out of this and we're growing together, but then we want to bring people into this and show them how the beauty of knowing Christ. Well, then that is where evangelism becomes a big part of that as well. And it all overlaps. Evangelism with discipleship, with fellowship, all this becomes layers on each other. So kind of summarize. Discipleship. Be a learner. Be a learner. I think it all starts with Paul said, well, he hadn't really achieved the goal. He hadn't attained. And as long as we keep in mind that we need to grow and we stay humble and don't think, hey, I know it all. One of the things I've learned in life is the minute I think I know it all, then I quit growing because I know it all. But I don't really know it all. So I got to keep in mind, even though I think I'm pretty good at something, there's still more to learn. There's still more to get better at. There's still more to grow at. There's still ways to develop, to mature, to get better. I'm good at this one thing. Okay, good. You know, you can always get a little bit better. Or maybe this means this is good enough in this part of your life. Let's go work on something else because there's other parts of your life. And once you think I've got this all mastered, God doesn't take him long to point something else out to you that, yeah, you don't really have it all mastered. You may be pretty good at a couple things, but there's a lot more things. I remember taking kids when I lived in Seville, Spain, I used to teach, I got contacted by this mission group that had a summer class or a semester in Spain class, and it was a Christian group. And they wanted to have somebody offer a Bible study for the American students who were there learning Spanish. And so I took them up on it. And so I would do about 4 Bible studies or 5 Bible studies a semester with this group of kids. And then we would do an event, like a go out and do something. And they were all studying Spanish. And some of them were pretty good. But we went to I remember they were in Sevilla in the spring or the fall or whenever it was, a lot of times the mosquitoes are really bad. And we don't really understand what mosquitoes are here because they don't really exist to a large extent, but they can be pretty bad. So they had these little things you could plug into the wall in your room, and it would kind of emit some kind of nasty smell that repelled both mosquitoes and humans. And but at this point, the mosquitoes were more bothersome than the humans, so we got them. So I took them over to the store, like a hardware store where you bought these things. And then they're like, these guys, they had been studying quite a bit and they were pretty advanced as far as students. But then you think you know quite a bit and they could carry on conversations. They'd go to a restaurant, they'd go to a bank, they'd go to this. but you walk in a hardware store, oh, you just had a big, huge new source of vocabulary. I have no idea what you call all this stuff. And it's kind of like that in our Christian life. We think we know something, then all of a sudden God just opens this door to something like, I have no idea what to do here. It's all new. It's just a completely different thing. And there's all these things. So look at, be a learner. You need to grow. You need to learn. You need to, maybe I should have put be a grower. Be a learner. Okay? Be a teacher. Be a teacher. One of the things I love about teaching is I grow more by teaching than anybody that I've ever taught has grown. Because I have to digest everything I'm going to teach. And so share with somebody. Share what you know. You go, well, I'm not that far along. Hey, you know, maturity doesn't come from age. It comes from acceptance of responsibility. It comes from being the person that God's called you to be. It comes from take the little bit that you know and share it. Then you know what? The other person's going to have questions. A lot of, well, I won't know the answer to the questions. Hey, join a club. Nobody knows the answer to the questions most of the time. Just, so what? So what? You don't know the answer. You know what you do? Here we go. What's your question? Write it down. I don't know the answer. That's simple enough. I don't know. That is an answer, by the way. If somebody asks you any question, you can almost always answer, I don't know. So you have an answer for every question right there. Okay, but then they say, I don't know yet. But that's a great question, and I'd like to figure it out myself. So then you go study. Now, you know what happened? All of a sudden, the person you're talking to or discipling or sharing, they've asked you a question that causes you to learn and you to grow. So now you are now the learner, right? So the whole process is a process of, you know, and then, like you say, then this, as people we start growing and learning, and then the person you're sharing with or discipling, they start learning some other things. You're probably not the only person in their whole life. They also have a book they can read. They start sharing things that they saw with you. All of a sudden, this is becoming more of a discipleship than it is, or a fellowship than it is this. Then you go, wow, you know, this would be great if we could bring more people into this. Well, how do we do that? We tell them about Jesus. Oh, that's called evangelism. And it all goes together. Look, be a learner, be a teacher. Because why? Because we grow together. We grow at the same time. The thing, you may be growing in a different area than I am. You may need a different thing. You may be struggling with some issue that I struggled with years ago. And I kind of have other issues today. But you know what? We share with this. We grow through this. You think, well, I've settled this in my mind 20 years ago. Great. Maybe if somebody else asks the question, you don't quite have it settled as much as you thought you had it settled. Maybe you need a refresher course. I don't know. But I do know that we all need to learn, we all need to teach, and we grow together. And that's called discipleship. Listen, God wants us to take the things we learn and share them with other people. He wants us to take who we are and help other people with that. He wants us to see other people who are growing and say, look, I want to be like that. How can I do that? What is it? You know, this happens through me, conversation. Part of the thing that's really great about being in a weekly type study or a weekly meeting or a weekly something is that it gives, and I think this is, I love this weekly meeting, and I get to share a lot, and I'm really thankful for that. And I'm thankful for all of your indulgence in listening to me for these things. But you know what? The interactions, like the men's thing on Thursday morning, the Tuesday night study, the Thursday night at the homologies, the high school ministry, all these are set up more to be these kind of, the Wallace's study on Mondays. They're all kind of designed more where we have a chance. There's more like sitting in a circle and kind of everybody's more equal and shares their thoughts and may get questions answered. It's a great time. Then sometimes, you know, it's meet with some person or meet with another person, and I grow through all those meetings. I totally encourage you. Like, when you go out today, look at the list or in the bulletin, look at your little list of Bible studies. Is there something I could be part of here? If you're not. Because you know what? It's a crucial element of why the church exists, is so that we can grow together. And we're all going to grow. We're going to learn from each other. We're going to teach each other. That's how it is.